All right, so tonight we're going to continue with our kind of family law, right? Family halacha, fathers and sons, parents and children. And now we're getting to the deep stuff. So I know I have a lot of sources on the sheet. I don't know if we'll get through all of them. And the truth is that there's even more I could have put on, but I'm theoretically saving it for the next amud, because there's even more. Because tonight we're going to be talking about Talmud Torah. Right, what we're doing right now, except only part of what we're doing right now, because I don't see any, unless you want to call your son in, then we could really do this.
Okay.
Somebody wants to call
him.
That's fine. So we're in the middle of the daf, okay, the two dots that say Lelamdo Torah. This is the third. We did Brit Milah, we did Pidyon HaBen. Now we're up to Lamdo Torah. There's a mitzvah for a father to teach his son Torah. So the Gemara says, how do you know? Minalan, dechtiv v'limadetem otam et b'neichem. Okay? So this is a pasuk in Dvarim. And the full pasuk says, v'limadetem otam et b'neichem l'daber bam b'shivtecha b'vitecha uv'lechtecha v'derech uv'shachcha uv'kumecha. Should sound vaguely familiar to all of us, right? Pasuk et shema, v'limadetem otam et b'neichem. V'limadetem means, and you shall teach. Okay? So, it's pretty straightforward. The Torah explicitly says that you're supposed to teach your son Torah. Then the Gemara says something familiar to us by now. V'hecha delo ag mere avua mechayev iu lemigran nafshe. What does that mean? Where the father did not teach him, ag mere, or gimel mem resh, unsurprisingly, means to teach or to learn. Right? So if he didn't teach him himself, meaning if the father didn't teach the son, how do we know that the son has to learn for himself? How do we know that a son has an obligation to teach himself Torah? Dichtiv ulamadetem. That's probably how you read that. I say probably because it may be that it actually just says vilimadetem. So Rashi can help us a little bit because actually in most versions of the old version of the Gemara, okay, not this one, the old version of the Gemara, there's no letter on ulamadetem or vilimadetem right over there. So it's not clear that it's a different pasuk from the first vilimadetem. But Rashi does tell us, dechdiv ulamadetem kra achrinahu ulamadetem otam ushmartem laasotam. That's a totally different pasuk. A totally different pasuk in Dvarim, which says that you're supposed to learn Torah. In fact, in the entirety of the whole Torah, this is the only pasuk that says that you're supposed to learn Torah. This is the only time that the verb lamed mem dalet is conjugated such that it means to learn as opposed to teach. Limeid, lilameid, that shows up a lot. But this is the only place in the whole Torah where teach or learning shows up at all. Okay? And Rashi says that that's what this pasuk is. But it could be that, where Rashi seems to be trying to forestall you from thinking is that it was the original pasuk that it was talking about, just a different way of conjugating. If you remember last time, we talked about padot tifteh and tifteh tipadeh, right?
He's explicitly, though, disconnecting it from b'nechem.
That pasuk just says, ulamadetem otam ushmatem la'asotam.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So
that's to learn.
Why is it bringing a separate?
Because it means every person has to learn.
Right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. He has to bring it because the first pasuk was specifically about the nechem.
It's true, except that we saw in the previous sugya that they did tifdeh tipadeh, and it was the same. There's no tipadeh. It was just tifdeh, but they said because you can conjugate it this way, then it should be learned both ways. So it could have been theory.
Without Rashi,
we could have said this is talking about the same pasuk, Vili Madatem, because there's nothing else here. Right? Rashi's telling us, no, it's a different pasuk.
But he went down to this point saying that if the father doesn't teach him, he's got to learn on his own.
Right.
Then what if the father does teach him, he should also learn on his own.
That's separately. You're right. He has a separate obligation to learn on his own, and that seems to be what it's saying. He has a separate obligation, he must learn on his own as well.
Not what the Gemara is saying.
What do you mean?
It's the Gemara is not bringing any other pasuk.
When it says Ulamaditem.
It doesn't
so,
say it's bringing. It just says you can read it a different way, but it's not saying it's not bringing a different pasuk.
No, so that's what I'm saying. Rashi thinks Rashi that it is. Rashi thinks it definitely. Rashi thinks the Gemara should be read Ulamaditem. This is a different pasuk. This is a different word.
And where is the pasuk?
Yeah, how would
it's in Dvarim. He says Dvarim Perik Hey. The full pasuk is Ulamaditem Otam Ushmartem Laasotam. It's an explicit pasuk in the Torah. It's just in a different place. But it tells you that you have to learn. What I'm pointing out is that without Rashi, we wouldn't have known necessarily this is a different pasuk. We might have read it as the same pasuk.
There's a pasuk on Pesach for the
son,
four sons.
Yeah, yeah. There's lots of stuff over there about teaching your son. You got to tell Levina Levincha. Lots of stuff. Yeah, yeah.
But not he should learn himself.
In fact, if you look in the Shulchan Aruch, if you go in Yoredeya Reish Mem, it's Reish Mem, Reish Malav, Reish Beis. I forget. Where he talks about that there's an obligation to learn Torah. What pasuk does the Shulchan Aruch, or Yosef Karo, wants to marshal a pasuk to tell you that you have an obligation to learn Torah? And what pasuk does he use? No. V'igita bo yomam ba'layla, which is bichlal a pasuk from Sefer Yoshua. Okay, so he doesn't even use this pasuk. Okay, so that's where we are. Good. Ulmaritav. Now the Gemara says, okay, but same. You know, we're doing the same template as before. Ihi minon de lo mechaifa. How do we know that a mother is not obligated to teach her son? Dichtiv v'limaritem ulimaritem. Let's assume that that's how we're supposed to read that. Kol shemitzuveh lilmod, mitzuveh lilamed. V'chol she'eno mitzuveh lilmod, eno mitzuveh lilamed. We should be familiar with this already. It's the same sequence that we've had before. One pasuk says that you have an obligation to teach. Another pasuk says you have an obligation to learn. Anybody who has an obligation to learn has an obligation to teach. And anybody who doesn't have an obligation to learn doesn't have an obligation to teach. All right, well, this just kicks the can down the road as usual, right? So now we have to figure out. How do we know that she doesn't have to teach, learn herself? How do we know that she doesn't have an obligation to learn? If she has an obligation to learn, then she would have an obligation to teach. So how do we know that she doesn't have an obligation to learn? Dichdiv veli maritem ulamaritem. Kol she'achere mitzuvim lelamdo, mitzuvim lelamed et atzmo. Kol she'inachere mitzuvim lelamdo, en mitzuvim lelamed et atzmo. So what does it do? Same thing as before. Anybody who must be taught must learn. Anybody who does not need to be taught does not need to learn. Okay?
And therefore does not need to teach.
And therefore does not need to show. Anybody who does not need to be taught does not need to learn, and therefore does not need to teach. So now we need the one last thing that we need to figure out. Hopefully, this is going to be the end of the line. Is how do we know
that she's not obligated to learn?
That she doesn't need to be taught. She doesn't. How do we know that she doesn't need to be taught? That exactly. Because it says b'neichem and not b'noteichem. So, at the end of the day, how does it work? She is not obligated. So there is no obligation to teach her. Therefore, there is no obligation for her to learn, and therefore, there is no obligation for her to teach. Okay, so she's out of the game. Well, at least in terms of the obligation, in the sense of the obligation.
No, I missed the different topic. When we're doing coming back, before,
yeah. Same template. We did it with Pidyon HaBen as well. Same exact template. Same template. Okay. So this is big sugya, right? This is the big sugya that says that women are not obligated to learn or teach or be taught Torah. All right? So we'll get back to that in a few minutes. Tanu Rabbanan, new principle. And this is also going to sound familiar. This is going to sound very familiar from Pidyon HaBen. Hu lilmod, uv no lilmod. What happens if there's only enough money for one tuition? Okay?
Father or son?
Father or son. What does he pay for? Hu kodim livno. Tanakama says, Pashut. Of course, he has an obligation personally. He has to take care of his obligation personally. Right? Some say chayecha kodmin, whatever. Anytime you have an obligation and another person's obligation, you should take care of yourself first. Rabbi Yehuda jumps in. This is the same that Rabbi Yehuda did before, right? But here, at least, he is explicit about his conditions. Because if you remember from last time, it looked like Rabbi Yehuda said with Pidyon HaBen that the son takes precedence. But it turned out that he didn't really say that. He just said that in certain circumstances, you should give a son priority with regards to the kind of money that you use, right? You use the kesef b'nei chorin because you can use the kesef b'nei shu'abadim for yourself. But he never said that you that your son takes precedence over you. So over here, he goes a little bit further, I guess you'd say. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im b'no zariz umimulach, v'talmudo mitkayem b'yado, b'no kodmo. Under certain circumstances, the father steps aside in favor of the son and pays the tuition of the son and neglects himself. In what circumstances?
Sharp kid.
The son is a sharp kid. He's sharper than him. Mimulach. There are metaphors over here. Mimulach is salty, right? He's sharp and he has a good memory. If the son is a better student than the father, then you make a decision that the son takes priority. That's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here.
Yeah. It's probably that's an easy get out.
Right. Only if you have just enough money.
Or you want to invest a lot in your kids' education.
What's the concept of money? So I'm saying, you're paying people to teach you?
Yes.
Because you're not going to be working?
No, you're paying people to teach.
Because you're not good enough.
You're paying tutors to teach you, or you're paying to go to yeshiva, or whatever, yeah. That's what's happening. There's a story there's a line that I think it's attributed to Rav Simcha ben Yemi Peshischa. He's very sharp, who said, you know, every time I meet somebody and I ask them, you know, why aren't you studying more? So he says, well, I have to work because I have to pay for the tuition of my son. I want him to grow up to be a Talmud Chacham. Then I meet the son and he grows up and he also goes into the business. And I ask him, and he says, I can't wait to see the child for whom everybody has been going to work. I can't wait to meet this kid. So now there's a story which is kind of the reverse of what we just saw. It uses the principle, but it's the reverse. Ki hadar Rav Yaakov breder Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Okay, so keep track. This is Rav Yaakov, the son of Rav Acha bar Yaakov. So the son. So it's Yaakov and his father's name is Acha, and his grandfather's name is also Yaakov. Shadre avua lekameda bayis. So Acha.
Is it relevant that we're naming all the fathers here in this Tana here that he's like coming in this sigid after we've got grandfather being nicknamed?
I don't know. They all have names like this. This is always the names. Rav Acha bar Yaakov.
We've got the Yichsin here.
We know Rav Acha bar Yaakov. Rav Acha bar Yaakov sent his son Yaakov Yankala to learn with Abaye. Shadre avua lekameda bayis. But then, Kiata, when he came home, so he started testing him. He started, I imagine that they expected these conversations to go differently than the conversation that we had with our sons. Because I don't think I would get a good, I don't think I get the best impression of what my son is learning at school from my conversations with, you know, in general. You know, what do you learn today? I don't know.
He's not learning with a buyer. If he's learning with a buyer,
okay, maybe. Well, it turns out, ki ata chazed elav mechadet den shmate, came back and he saw that, you know, the kid doesn't know how to learn. He doesn't remember anything. So you know what he said? I'm like, ana difni minech. You know what? I learned better than you. Tov ad deizel ana. It's better that I should go. So basically, he cut off his son's tuition, and he took over. He said, the only reason I was sending you is because
you were sharper.
I thought you were sharper, but it turns out that you're not. So then I should go, because I have an obligation that supersedes yours.
The kid could use this in reverse, right?
Right.
Like, I'm not going to school, you go to school.
But what's funny about this is that, you know, you get the impression that clearly, initially at least, Rav Acha bar Yaakov thought that his son was going to outdo him, right? But look what happens. Shama Abaye de Kahava Ati. Abaye heard that Rav Acha bar Yaakov was coming. Hava'u mazik be Rabbanan de Abaye. And there was this mazik, there was this demon that was wreaking havoc in the, you know, in the household of Abaye, or in the neighborhood of Abaye. And it was so bad that the Havu Aili Batrena feel be a mama have a mitziki. So bad that even when two people would go out in the daytime, it would attack them. Now the rule is that the mazikin are only supposed to attack at night and only to attack individuals. Right? This is why you're supposed to go around in numbers at night. This is why, you know, you're not supposed to leave somebody alone at Maariv. This is why in the Mishnah it could be that it says some people goes for a walk late at night, he takes his life into his own hands. But here, the mazik is so bad that it's attacking people during the daytime and even in pairs. So he heard Rav Acha bar Yaakov is coming. Amelu lo leitiv le'inish ushpiza. After the mitrachesh nisa, said, Rav Acha bar Yaakov is coming. He called a meeting of the community and said, nobody let him into your house tonight. Nobody let Rav Acha bar Yaakov into your house tonight. Al bat ba'o be'erbanan idmile kantita de shiva rishvute kol kriya de kara natar chadreshe. Rav Acha bar Yaakov stuck outside. He was davening Maariv, I guess. And he started saying modim. And every bow that he did, another head from this demon was cut off. Okay? And the Gemara says that it looked like a serpent. That's what it was. It looked like a serpent and like a hydra. Really, is basically what this is, a hydra. And every single time he bowed down during his tefillah, another head would get cut off. And then Rav Acha bar Yaakov woke up. Amalu Rav Acha lamachar. And the next day, Eloi trachish nisa sankintin. He gave musar to Abai. He said, well, if I didn't have a nace happen to me, then I could have been in real serious danger. Okay? So that's who Rav Acha bar Yaakov was. So I wonder what he expected of his son. I don't know. It's a lot of pressure, I guess. It's not surprising that he didn't, Anyways, we'll stop there. Let's do one more line. Tana Rabbanan, Lilmo Torah Velisa Isha, what should a person do? If you have to decide what to do first, to learn Torah, meaning to go to Kollel, I guess, or to get married, what do you do first? The answer is Yilmo Torah V'achar Kach Kisa Isha. Why? Why? Exactly. V'im Yav Shar Lo Bo Isha. And if he can't, he needs to get married because Zitzah Har is coming after him. Yisa Isha V'achar Kach Yilmo Torah. Okay, so you have to evaluate yourself. Are you misugal to learn Torah and overcome your Yitzah Hara or not? So Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel Halacha No Se Isha V'Achakach Im Torah. He says no. Everybody should do this. You should get married first and then the Torah. And Rav Yochran, echoing Paul, said, I think it was Paul or it was Andrew. I don't know. Rechaim Tzarav Yasek B'Torah. He says, what? You have a chain around your neck and you're going to learn Torah now. The Rechaim Betzavaro is not the wife. That's not what Rabbi Yochanan means. Rabbi Yochanan means because you have a wife, you have to support her, you have to support your family. So Rechaim Betzavaro is a reference to the idea that you have to work now. You have a millstone around your neck, you have to work. And because you have to work, how are you going to learn Torah? So it's better to, as a single guy.
To work because of your wife, so you have a responsibility.
Yeah, but it's not what we think it means. Okay, so he said. So what's the deal? What's the difference between Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, and Rav Yochanan? V'lo pligi halan v'halahu. What does halan v'halahu mean? It always means the same thing. Halan v'halahu means this is for us and this is for them. What does it mean though? It always means the same thing in Shas, as far as I know. Take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, "Halan v'halahu, bnei Bavel hayu holchin v'gorsin mishnayot atanayim b'aret Yisrael, u'mitoch shalomdim chutz l'mukomam ein tzorchei abayit mutalim alav." Halan v'halahu means this is for those in Bavel, and this is for those in Israel. Right? These were cultural differences between the two of them that resulted in halachic differences. That's what it always means. Halan v'halahu. It comes up a lot. So he says the story over here is that the people from Bavel, they would go and they would learn in Eretz Yisrael. And because they weren't home, so they didn't have to worry about Tzorchei Abayit. No Se'isha, Da'ava B'lo Yirur, V'achakach, Holech V'lo Matur. So they're able to learn Torah and then abandon their wives. And their wives will have to fend for themselves, run a grocery store, and they don't have to work because there's no point in working. Right? But in Eretz Yisrael, where they're working and they're learning, so, Rechaim Tzavaro. Although I guess I would insert over here, just to make it a little bit nicer, the Chatam Sofer, right? You know what the Chatam Sofer says? This is a game-changing Chatam Sofer. Chatam Sofer says, you have the machlokas between, those who say that you have to spend all your time learning and those who say that you have to work. And he says, it's pashut. That depending on where you live, whether it's in Eretz Yisrael or whether it's in Chutz La'aretz, you absolutely have to work. I should be clear. That depending on where you live, especially you have to work. Now, which one? Where do you have to work? Where don't you have to work?
In Eretz Yisrael, you have to work.
He said, absolutely 100%. In Eretz Yisrael, you have to work because it's a mitzvah to work in Eretz Yisrael. Yishuv Haaretz is a mitzvah. He said, you can't claim that, I'm going to just learn Torah. You're being mevatel a mitzvah saseh. You have to work. In Chutz Laaretz, do whatever you want, because anyways, you don't have to build a plan, let the goyim work, let them make the money, and you'll sit and learn. In Eretz Israel, it's not an option. It's not an option. You have to get into high tech, you have to be a programmer, you have to be an investment banker, you have to, whatever, in order to create the society. So that could be a nice little insert into the halan v'halo business.
If you care, that's where it says ben shwana esri the kopra and ben esri the...
Yeah.
Well, the other way around.
That comes up right over here. Maybe next time. It's at the bottom of the page. It talks about that. Okay. Good. All right, what do we want to talk about tonight? So what we're going to start with is we'll just read some Rambams. Okay, this is what I like to do now. This is what I do these days. Is just read Rambams. Okay, Rambam Hilchot Talmud Torah Perek Aleph. This is the beginning of Hilchot Talmud Torah. It's the one with the title on the page. Lilamod Alamed or Lilamod Almanat Alamed. So Rambam says we're going to read all four of these first halachot. Nashim v'avadim uktanim p'turim mitalmud Torah. It's interesting. That's how he starts. Right. That's how he starts. Nashim k'tanim avadim uktanim p'turim mitalmud Torah. Aval katan aviv chayav lelamdo Torah shneimar v'limaritem otam et b'nichem l'daber bam. Okay, ve'ein ha'ish chayav et lamed et b'na shekol chayav l'lmod chayav l'lamed. So far, so good, clear. Keshem shechayav adam l'lamed et b'no kach chayav l'lamed et ben b'no. So this is actually on the next amud. On Daf Lamed. Maybe we'll come back to this next time. So just like you have the obligation to teach your son, you also have an obligation to teach your grandson. But what's interesting here is that what? One might have thought that the obligation to teach his son...
The father of the grandson has to do that.
Fine, but once he says, okay, just like you have an obligation to teach your son, you have an obligation to teach your grandson. So one might have thought that, okay, that's just an extension of the original chiyuv to teach your son, so you should also teach your grandson. But if that were the case, then what would the Rambam not do? That he does.
Bring a pasuk.
Bring a separate pasuk. Bodatim levanecha v'livnei vanecha. Which tells us that there's something else going on, which we won't talk about tonight. V'lo b'no v'en b'no bilvar el mitzvah kol chacham v'chacham yisol l'lamed et kol atalmidim v'alfa b'shein an banav. Okay, general obligation to teach. Shneemar v'shinatam levanecha mipi ha-shmu alamdu banecha. Elu talmidecha. So from Shiatam Levanecha, we actually learn the obligation to teach everybody. Shatalmidim, Kuriyim, Banim, Shneamar, Veitzu, Bnei Anivim, Ken Laman, Istaval, Bno, Val, Ben, Bno. Separately, why are you, given a special instruction to teach your son and your grandson? If you have an obligation, anyways, to teach everybody, Lakdim, Bno, Leven, Bno, Uven, Bno, Leven, Chaviro. Because there's a hierarchy. First goes your son, then goes your grandson, then goes everybody else. Fair enough.
That mitzvah to teach is a mitzvah to have taught. It's not saying that everyone has to teach.
Right, I see what you're saying. Not everybody has that obligation. Not everybody has an obligation to teach everybody.
Yeah.
Fair. V'chayav liskor, there you go, v'chayav liskor, to pay, l'mlamed livno l'lamdo. You have to pay for tuition. That does not extend to anybody else, right? That's another difference between the obligation to teach your son and the obligation to teach others. So you don't have to pay for other people's tuition. Mi shelo limdo aviv chayav lelamed et atzmo. Read very carefully how the Rambam phrases this. Because what could he have said? What should he have said? Mi shelo limdo aviv chayav
lilmod.
But he doesn't. Lelamed et atzmo. Kishi Yakir, another important thing. Shneamar, ulmaritam otam, shmartam lasotam. So that's the pasuk that Rashi quoted. Vechenet amotze b'kol makom shatamud kodem lemaaseh mivnei shatamud mevili demaaseh v'ena maaseh mevili demtamud. Interesting. Why does the Rambam add this line? What is he trying to tell you in this last line over here? What does it seem to be saying?
You have to learn before you can do. There,
and why is he telling you this?
Because you might think.
Right, because he's saying this is the reason why a person must teach himself, so that he'll know what to do. And in fact, what does the pasuk that he quotes actually say? L'manetam otam, u'shmartam lasotam. Right, that pasuk is talking about learning to do. Right, learning in order to do. So for the Rambam over here, that pasuk, that obligation that a person has to teach himself, is an obligation to teach himself so he knows what to do. I know that sounds simple.
It's not the obligation to teach his son as well.
No. Well, I mean, I'm not on the face of it, because that's a separate pasuk. I know it sounds simple what I just said, but it may turn out to be not so simple.
There's big ramifications, because women need to learn in order to do.
Oh, okay. It's fair. Although, yeah, that's fair. So
we got the impression of teaching your son is that it's age limited. Would an 80-year-old man have the obligation to teach his 60-year-old son?
That's a good question. It probably relates also to this part about Kishe Yakir, right? Let me flip that question around. Yeah, it may not be the same question, but at what point...
You're strong.
What point are you possible? At what point is it the responsibility of the Ben to teach himself?
Right. Whatever? But you're making a leap there. I would have just said, at what point does the son now have at least his own responsibility to learn himself? But Mike is wondering, even after the son has an obligation to teach himself, does that mean that I'm now out of the picture as a father?
Right, but there's a kid, let's say 60-year-old kid, turn around to dad and say, listen, I want you to pay my yeshiva fees.
Right. Right. Maybe he can. Maybe he can say that. Yeah.
Well, so what's enough? Is there enough, or is it...
That we're not covering tonight. That we're not covering tonight. Maybe next time.
So I have a different question. Maybe same question. Talmud Torah.
Yeah.
What is it? Are we talking here about...
Yeah.
You have to learn halacha?
Yeah.
Right? Once you know the halacha, you're done?
So again,
if you know any of the reasons, or is it what we're doing sitting around?
It's a good question. It's covered on the next Amud, so I don't want to talk about that particular question. I need to limit what we're going to talk about tonight, because we have to.
Let's try and narrow that specifically. Is demonstrating by example teaching, right? If a father, you know, gets up in the morning, you know, washes hands, does kreshma, all the rest of the business.
In a way,
is that
yes.
Sufficient education for the child to count as him fulfilling his
responsibility? I don't think the Gemara is talking about that, but I mean, in a way, yes, in terms of him learning the halacha. That's how people used to learn halacha.
That's exactly how people learn.
Right? Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik has an article called Rupture and Reconstruction, which I encourage everybody to read. It's about 60 pages, but it's worth it, where he talks about the transition in Jewish history from learning by looking at their family, you know, looking at your mother's, you know, running the kitchen, looking at the way that your father davened or whatever it is, and that's how we used to learn, to learning from books and what ramifications that has on Jewish society and the way that we observe halacha and the rise of chumras and how that might be related to that and things like that.
But we still learn a lot from observing.
We do, but less. We learn less because, I mean, the kids are in school. Right?
That's painful education. We're just outsourcing our...
We used to learn a lot more from our parents.
So maybe it was less available also, by the way. I imagine it was less available than our grandparents. I mean, I just hear anecdotally from my grandparents there was less available Jewish schooling-wise in London than there was in my day.
And the kids spent a lot of time around the house, and they were helping around the house. They weren't watching Netflix, and they weren't playing video games, and they were...
Go back a few thousand years, right?
Yeah.
And you're talking about the education that was available.
There was no education.
Exactly. It's watching and learning, and this is how it's done. This is the Messiah.
That's why you had to pay. That's why you had to pay for tuition.
Which is why it was so rare. So,
so
I guess the fact that they're talking a bit here about having to pay is the distinction between learning from copying and
I mean, we automatically pay. Right? That's just the way that we do it, right? We pay for our tuition. We spend our kids to school, and that's how most people fulfill this obligation, is that they send their kids to school, and that's how they do it. Last halacha over here. This is the last thing that we saw, right? The father goes before the son. If he can understand better, the son, then the son goes first. That doesn't mean that now you don't have to learn anything. You can't see, but once again, right? He has an obligation to teach himself. Just like he has an obligation to teach his son, he has an obligation to teach himself. Okay. All right. What kind of points do we want to... What interests us about these halachos in the Rambam? It's basically echoing the Gemara with, you know, some nuances in the language. The first thing that interests me, okay, is the grandson. We're gonna leave, but the first thing that interests me is an interesting diuk that I found over here in the Sefer Otzar HaMelech, which I think somebody mentioned it offhand, but look at what he says. Umashikad of a chayav liskor lo melamed. He says specifically, you have to pay for a melamed. Hainu, kshav ein yachol ilmod imo batzmo. Az yaskir lo melamed. The Rambam, he says, the Rambam's talking about when the father can't learn with him. Aval kshav yachol ilmod imo batzmo. Yesh lachkor im rashay liten leben liyad acher lelamdo.
By the way, also, I often think about with my kids, I think about the Pirkei Avos she'ein ha'bayshan melamed ve'ein ha, what's that?
Kaptan melamed.
Kaptan melamed. And yeah. I think that sometimes it's worthwhile actually having a third party.
To pay somebody else, absolutely.
Pay somebody else.
100%. I often tell fathers it's probably better for, you know, just for bar mitzvah lessons, right? Often better to have somebody else teach them. I learned Gemara with my son for his bar mitzvah, and it wasn't easy. And I don't know what would have happened if it had been somebody else, but I wanted to do it, so we did it.
Right.
It's not always easy to learn with a son, but and here he's saying, though, but wait a second. It could be that if you are able to do it, then you're not allowed to outsource it. Now, why would he say this? Have we seen this before?
The Brit Milah,
right? So he quotes, we saw that shach. And the shach ended and it says, Vot ha-manashim ha-mechabdim la-acher la-mul b'neim av-kshem ha-atz m'molim hem avadli mitzvah gedolah de-milah v'yesh v'yesh le-beitin l'vat al-zeh ayin sham heitev. Shach said, if you're a Moel, you can give somebody else to do the Brit Milah. So maybe that would be the same thing over here. If you're able to learn with your son, then who says that you can outsource it to somebody else? Now he mentions his v'im kenim mitvarim gamko v'shpatol l'amdo sefer dimu ba'as miyodeh sefer and Rashi says you should be allowed to do it, but he says, oh, I saw Tfuah Shor disagrees with the Shachem, he saw that also the Ramah disagrees. It seemed like certainly the minhag olam is not to try to do a bris milah by yourself. I haven't seen anybody say that you would have to. If you were a surgeon, I don't see anybody saying nowadays that you have to do the bris milah for yourself, for your own son. And so it doesn't seem that the halacha follows that shach. So it wouldn't necessarily follow it over here. But it is something to think about, right? You know, do we too much outsource our Talmud Torah with our children to school? You know, if we have a direct obligation, maybe we should try to take the reins a little bit more than we do.
Wouldn't you have to, on top of it, even if you are outsourcing, you've still got a mitzvah to do it. Yeah, unless you've got absolutely no ability.
Why do you say have to? What do you mean have to?
You need to be, let's say, you need to, and a couple of things, let's say you've got ideas of what kind of hashkafic ideals you may have that you could have an input in.
I get it, yeah.
For example, or make sure that your kid, personally, is keeping up with the rest of the class.
Right.
Probably there's that, but engaged, I think in today's day and age, I think engaged parents, children is about engaged parents as well as Shakira.
You should speak to them. But you should get someone else to speak them into.
Yeah, I mean,
you do the talking, someone else do the teaching.
I don't think anybody says that you shouldn't learn with your children. He was just saying, you know, there is room to say that you must learn with your children if you're able to, and you shouldn't be outsourcing it to anybody else. But as Joe pointed out, very often the relationship between a father and a son, doesn't lend itself to learning Torah because there's pressure, and you're always there, and there may be other psychological nuances between the father and the son that prevents them. Or maybe the son looks up to the Rebbe and he doesn't necessarily look up to the father. Those kinds of things happen.
I can't think of anything here except for it's just setting the example. It just keeps coming back to that. You know, you can't expect your son to learn and do anything if you're not doing it.
Oh, yeah, I get you. Yeah.
Right? Like seriously, you know, wake up, go to shul, except you don't get up and you don't go to shul.
Right.
He doesn't see you, you know, doing whatever else. You can't expect him to.
Right.
So, doesn't the Rambam say somewhere else that you're not allowed to take money to teach people Torah?
So the Gemara talks about that, and there's a distinction there between Torah Shebaal Peh and Torah Shebichtav, which actually works the opposite way of what you would expect it to work. But those things are always bendable. They really are. I mean, there's always.
I was trying to think which way I would expect it to work.
Well, the Gemara says that you can take money to teach Torah Shebichtav, and you can't take money to teach Torah Shebalpeh. Which is, I don't know, the opposite of what I would expect. It's Gemara in Nedarim, I think, that talks about it. Before we get to the Rav, if you flip the page for a second, there's another.
The Rambam mentions here, which I don't remember from the Gemara, although the Gemara quotes the Pasuk, is learning in order to do.
Right.
The Gemara quotes the Pasuk, but doesn't make a big deal about it, whereas the Rambam says specifically that you go to one of the reasons you learn is order that you can
do the. So we'll see the significance of that soon.
What about Robbie's, and what about your other comment about the
women? Oh, it's part in it.
Yeah, so we'll get back to that. That's going to be significant. But if you flip the page for a second, just another point before we jump into the Brisker Torah. So you have the Sefer Lechem Yehuda over here. And he wonders about a different question that I mentioned. Why does he need a proof that a person needs to learn Torah? Did anybody think that you'd be pater from learning Torah just because your father didn't teach you? Did anybody really think that? Says maybe the Rambam is telling you that a son has an obligation to learn Torah, if his father doesn't teach him. Because at what point does he have that obligation? Because what did the Rambam say? Mishayakir. How old? At what point is that? It's relatively young, right? It's definitely not 13. It's way before 13. Mishayakir. So he says maybe it's to tell you that kodem sheyavol lichal mitzvot misha sheyakir ba'atzmo chayav v'limud. That's why he needs a pasuk to tell you. V'zeh shedigdeg v'lashon v'katav k'sheyakir v'lo katav k'sheyagdil k'mo gabi mila v'hutzrach l'fi zeh l'raya me'amikra o'me'asvara mikra d'achtibu l'maritem utam v'shmaritem d'lavol lichal mitzvot lo istrich d'lo gara misha mitzvot. Because, you know, just like other things, you might think that he'd be pater until he becomes comes of age, but no. Here, maybe it's telling you that you have to. You have to learn Torah even before you become a bar mitzvah. And he says, and this works very well with the pasuk choice that the Gemara and the Rambam used. Because in fact, the pasuk that they used talks about learning in order to do. So of course you need to do that before you become a bar mitzvah, because when you become a bar mitzvah,
you know what to do.
You already need to know what to do.
But he starts it with katan. It's not
being pater, that the father doesn't have to teach a katan. So a katan over there.
A katan never an issue.
Right, that his father does not have to teach him. Right?
Well, no. Because a woman and an
eved
is.
Sorry, Talmud Torah, but he says a katan aviv chayav l'amdo Torah.
Right, but how can we now say that the katan is chayav to teach himself if his son doesn't teach him?
So he's adding on. He's saying that the katan that maybe it's a matter of age, meaning the katan who's very young, he doesn't have to be taught. Or you're right, and from the pasuk of v'limaditem et b'neichem, there is no obligation, but from the pasuk of ulimaditem otam. That there is an obligation. But then, Lachim Yudah.
Maybe it's the obligation of the father, not the son. Maybe it's actually it's more sure that the father starts early as well.
Right. Now, the truth is that the Lachim Yudah doesn't pull the trigger in the end. He says, Miu Bagamara Ein Ramiz Azat. The Gemara never says anything like this. The Chidush Kihai Avala Lefrushe. It should have said it. Father Abin Masha Klaal Tomatora Sham Babraita Mila Vapidyon Mashma de Shivyon Hem Ben Bechiyuv. Nobody said that a child has an obligation to do a bris milah before he's 13. Everybody agrees that he only has an obligation on himself to do a bris milah when he's 13. And same with pidyon haben. So that's only when it comes up. So he assumes it's the same thing for Talmud Torah, and kishayakir over here is just a coincidence. Fine. But and the truth is that most of the Rishonim seem to understand it this way. Instead of saying Kishayakir, they say Kishayigdal. The Sefer Chinuch says that. The Meiri says that. Almost everybody seems to say it only occurs only once a son is 13. But interesting that the Rambam could have theoretically said Kishayakir. Okay, now, one of my favorite pieces in the Rav. This is Sefer Harei Kedem, which is the Rav has, there are three volumes by Rav Michal Shurkin, who is a Haredi yeshivish rabbi, I mention that because when he talks, when he writes, you know, this is the Divrei Torah of Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, he describes him as the Av Beis Din of Boston. Doesn't say anything about him being a Rosh Hashiva in NYU. It's well known. This is just a well-known thing, that's the way that he saw him. So, in Harei Kedem on Shavuos, so he has a long piece over there, and I just cut in the middle over here, where the underline starts. I'm on the first side of the page. It says, Nir Milshon Shal Rambam Davar Chidush. It's a Chidush in the Rambam. Shemitzvah Talmud Torah Einu Mitzvah Shalimud. It's not actually a mitzvah of learning. Ve'esek HaTorah. Ela, Kol Ma'ut HaMitzvah U'Lamed Torah U'Lamosra L'Chol Yisrael. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah is not a mitzvah of learning. It was only ever a mitzvah of teaching and transmitting. Ela Shebichlal HaChiyuv Shalamed L'Levad HaChayiv L'Lamdat B'no V'en B'no V'Chol Yisrael Nichlal Gam Chiyuv L'Lamed Et Atzmo. Just like you have to teach your child and to teach other people, you also have to
teach
yourself. But it's not about learning, it's about teaching. It's about transmitting the tradition to yourself. The gam lelamed et atzmo avi ofen shel limud haTorah lechlal Yisrael. V'lo od, el shehu kodem livno v'chol adam, ava mikol makom, mahut achiyuv hu lelamed et haTorah lemosar lechol Yisrael. You go first because, you know, that's the way that it has to be done. But, as we'll see, but it's really only an obligation to teach yourself. It's not an obligation to learn. That's why the word never shows up. Except in this one place, it's almost always teaching, teaching, teaching. Because the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is a mitzvah of teaching.
But teaching yourself is learning.
Functionally, yes. But the question is, what's the context over here? What's the actual... the way that he's going to say it is, that's the... there's a difference between the chiyuv and the kiyum. Or the meisa mitzvah and the kiyuma mitzvah. What are you actually...
He's saying it's like building a sukkah, is he? The mitzvah is to sit in the sukkah, but you have to build the sukkah.
It's similar to that. No, the mitzvah to build the sukkah is a hechsher mitzvah. It has nothing to do...
The mitzvah is the sukkah. The mitzvah is to teach. So you're only learning like you build a sukkah.
In theory, you don't have to build the sukkah, though. You don't have to build the sukkah because you can sit in someone else's sukkah.
Right. But I'm saying if you do. So as we've seen in the Brit Milan with Pijon, right? And if you're not capable of doing it yourself, then far better to pay someone else to do it for you. So the lelamed or whatever else could be right. You know, I'm no good. I'll pay someone else to teach, and I've yet studied it.
And then you won't be part of the tradition, though. But there's an obligation to teach you. That's the thing. There's an obligation floating around in the air to teach you as well. So you can't just pass that off and say I'm not going to do that.
But
it's an obligation to teach you that exists. You're responsible for someone teaching you.
But that proves a point, because you can hire someone to teach you. You can't hire someone to learn for you.
Correct.
So that's the whole point.
Correct.
Yeah, but also, but again, what you were saying before about doing, and we're learning to teach.
I think there's two different types of learning going on here. There's learning for the sake of learning, which is a mitzvah of learning, and there's learning, which is like a hechsher mitzvah for doing all the other mitzvot, because otherwise you won't know how to keep Shabbat and kosher and whatever.
The kolos tell you you can't pay someone to learn for you.
What?
The kolos tell you you can't
pay
someone to learn for you.
Yeah. It doesn't work exactly. I'm sure that we're going to cover that in the next stop also. But
but is that a reasonable distinction between learning for the sake of mitzvah of learning and learning as a hechsher mitzvah to doing other...
You know the answer to that, because you've heard of Rosner enough times. So we're going to see...
I wish I could remember.
We're going to see that on the other side of this page. When we get to Rav Soloveitchik's great grandfather.
According to this view.
Yeah.
Is he really?
He's not done. You'll see how far he takes it.
Yeah.
What do you think? What would be the biggest ramification of this position?
That actually teaching yourself is not a mitzvah in its.
No, it
so
is.
So I'll give you the.
It is 100% is.
If you've learned it, you don't have to learn it again.
That has to do with the mitzvah of Lima Torah itself. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but okay, fine. Let's leave that aside for a second. I hear what you're saying, but anyways, you know, by the same token, what are you saying? That if I taught my son something already, then I don't have to teach him again?
Actually, there could be a distinction between teaching your son something, where if he knows that you don't have to teach him again, and learning, which is a mitzvah, a different mitzvah. You can teach something again and again and again, and each time.
So you have a mitzvah to learn to teach yourself again and again and again. I mean, it's not.
But then it's semantics. If that's what you're
saying, you'll see why it's not semantics soon.
But on that, there's something that's much more hard. If you teach somebody and they don't learn it, like you're teaching a class and they're falling asleep.
Right.
You're teaching your son and you're not interested in his falling asleep. And you fall in the midst of teaching. You're trying to teach him and the kid's not interested. He's not
interesting.
Right, that's where you're going, right?
That's interesting.
It wasn't. But.
So that's interesting.
Just say yeah.
So let's keep going. We'll see how far he takes it. The kevich geniret a mitzvah shel lamed Torah yeshev del ben a chiyuv shel mitzvah. Okay, the chiyuv of the mitzvah, the ma'at hakiyum shel mitzvah. This is classic the Rav. Okay, the Rav had this model that he always used, the chiyuv and the kiyum. I'll give you another. Most famous examples of this are actually, for example, with Simchas Yom Tov. Oh, Simchat Yom Tov. Right. So. How do you do Simchas Yom Tov?
Eat.
Good. You eat meat and drink wine, right? But what does that mean? Does that mean that Hashem said on Yom Tov you're supposed to eat meat and drink wine? Is that what Hashem said? No. So he said on Yom Tov you're supposed to be happy. You're supposed to be happy. The chiyuv is, or maybe I'm messing this up. The kiyum is being happy on Yom Tov, but the chiyuv is the way to do that is to eat. That's the Maisa Mitzvah. That's how you do it. But there's a kiyum and then there's a chiyuv slash maisa. So over here he's saying the same thing. Okay, this is a distinction that I wanted to save till next time, but he's going to make it now. If this is right, then in a certain way, who should go first? So he says, with regards to the maisa mitzvah, the way that you're supposed to perform it, your son goes before your grandson. V'lo'od, and you also go before your son. That's the way that we conduct ourselves. Ach, but the higher purpose, which is to teach others, in a certain way, it's more important to teach your grandson than it is to teach your son, and more important to teach your son than it is to teach yourself. Why? Because it's about transmitting the Masorah and pushing it down the line, right? In terms of the chiyuv, you have to teach yourself. I have to. The point is to give it over to the next generations. Okay, fine. Now take a look at this.
The concept of pur revu.
Right.
There's some who say that you only, let's say, once you have grandchildren.
Once you have your children have grandchildren.
Right. Yeah. So that second stage is really out of your hands.
Yeah, it is.
So you're fulfilled via your son. So could it be the same here that when your son teaches his son, your grandson, that you fulfilled that way, that you've given your son the ability to teach his son?
Are you part of that mitzvah? Do you get some of the?
I mean, that's up to God.
It's like Tupperware.
That's up to God.
You get a.
That's up to God.
It's a pyramid scheme.
That's up to God. But look, I'll spoil it a little bit. I was going to plan to talk about this next time. But Zalvechik, in the larger piece, he uses the Ramban to say there's actually two separate chiyuvim over here. There's a chiyuv, and that's why the Rambam mentions the grandson separately, meaning there's a separate point of Odatum Levanecha B'Livnei Vanecha, which is transmitting the Torah to successive generations. And then there's a separate one, which is the mitzvah of Limuda Torah, which is learning and teaching yourself and your son. But take a look at this. Umaisa Brisk, Ba'av Ubno. Okay, there was a case that happened in Brisk. The father and the son, Sheshneim Ayu Tzrichim LeMelamed. Okay, now we've seen this story already, right? In the Gemara. The Melamed himself could only teach one. He only had time to teach either the father or the son. So what should he do?
Why can't they learn together?
I don't know.
Different countries.
Well, if it's up to the father, then the father should go first, right?
Yeah.
So... They were equal in terms of intelligence. So what should happen?
Father.
Okay, there's a Chaim of Brisk. That's the Rav's grandfather. The Ben goes first. And everybody said, why? He's going against the Rambam. Ulam agrach bir ta'amo. Before we read it, what do you think his reason is going to be?
He's got longer to learn. He'll become a greater Talmud Chacham over the years.
Close.
Because if you need to push the Torah down.
Shu yodeh b'tivo shel ha'av, shigam im ilmot Torah b'midah merubah, mikom akom ein koch b'yadol la'anchila l'dorot habayim al-acherim. He's not a good teacher. Ma she'en kein im ilmedu et ben Torah, hu yimsor et ha'Torah gam l'dorot habayim. The son will. Maybe it's because he's younger, but also I think he's a good teacher. Chaim felt that if the son is able to transmit the tradition better than the father, forget about whether or not he's able to learn a ktsos better, or whether or not he can memorize psukim and nach. No, question is,
can he teach?
Can he teach? And if he can teach better than the father, then he should take priority.
Which you'd assume he would, because the father's not teaching him.
I think it was, well, over here it seems that they were both intelligent. And
but the father opted not to teach his son.
Oh, I see. So, that's true. Yeah, I guess.
Or it's the, I don't know, it's if the objective is ultimately to teach as many generations as possible.
Right.
Right? And, you know, the teacher can only teach one, then go a step down the line. You know, you're not sure how successfully the father will be able to teach the son, right? So teach the son,
maybe
skipping out.
Maybe. I mean, I think there is another mitigating factor over here, which is that it doesn't seem like it's up to the father, this decision. It seems like it's up to the malabed, this decision. It's not like, I mean, I don't know, maybe the father's paying for it, so maybe not. But there. It's easier to make this cheshbon when you're looking at it from the outside as opposed to from the father's perspective. If it's the malame trying to decide who he's going to teach, so yeah, he can pick the one that's going to be the better teacher. It's harder if you say, okay, but now the father has to decide if he's going to learn or the son's going to learn, and what? Because the son's going to be a better teacher, so then...
Yeah, but surely there's going to be an element of pride in the father and the son, that the father's going to be proud and the son's going to be something.
Sure.
Well, actually, a malamed will
definitely.
A malamed would get to pick the younger, more malleable mind.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Surely, it's easier to teach a kid.
He said that they were both equal. I mean, if that was the case, then fine. But they were both equal.
Ability to learn.
Yeah, that's what he said.
By a son, do you actually mean a child, son? Is that what we're saying?
The son, yeah. The father and the son.
Yeah, but are we talking about a child's son as opposed to...
I don't know.
So it gets great. It gets great. It
doesn't make sense. It doesn't
make sense.
I don't know. I don't know how young he was. That's a really important point in the Rav. And I think it's just buttressed by the fact that the Rambam keeps saying, L'lamed et atzmo. I mean, the Rambam says it. L'lamed et atzmo. He doesn't say l'lamod. He says l'lamed et atzmo. To teach yourself. I had a friend who, you know, when I was talking this over with him one time, he said, you know, it's interesting because if Rabbi Soloveitchik is right, then the Rambam is basically saying that Talmud Torah is a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveiro, and not ben adam l'makom. Like anybody would have said, it's a ben adam l'makom. You know, you're learning Torah, it's ben adam l'makom. But now he's turned it into a ben adam l'chaveiro, because when you're learning, either you're teaching yourself or you're teaching other people, but that's the kiyum ha-mitzvah. The kiyum ha-mitzvah is to teach, is to engage somebody in limud Torah. Whether it's you or it's somebody else, that's what it is. It's a social mitzvah.
Rashi would say it's both, because he brings the extra pasuk.
Because he has, it could be that it's both, right. It could be that it's both.
From a mashkafa point of view, it's right, because what's the point of learning yourself if you don't teach?
So I was going to say, you know, if you follow the Rav Chaim story, right, how many people in a kollel go on to teach, right? Or would you want to go on to teach, right? I mean, they're not just because somebody can learn doesn't mean that they can teach, right? If they're going to go on to be dayanim, fine, that's fine. That's another job. They go on to be mashgichim, that's another job as well. But if, you know, if they're not going to go on to do anything else, then, you know, you'd rather have good teachers. That's really what you need. And there's supposedly a dearth of that. Okay. So, and go on to another piece of Brisker Torah. So this is the Sefer Birkat Avraham that I have over here on the other side of the page, which is of Avram Erlanger. Shlita, I think. And he quotes the Birchat Shmuel. Okay, Birchat Shmuel is the Rav Shmuel. Oof. It's escaping me now. Baranovich. What was it? Shmuel. can't remember. The Birka Shmuel is it was one of the Talmidim of Chaim of Brisk. So he brings another point of Rav Chaim over here, which is pretty much echoing the Beis Halevi, which is Rav Chaim's father himself. So if you look, he starts off quoting the Rambam, Im Bno Zariz, Mabulach, etc., etc. And he says, Tzarich Be'ur, okay, like the fourth line in, Tzarich Be'ur Mai Kamar, Di Yesh Lo Shehut Gam Lo Lod Ba'atzmo, Pshita. Farni Yitbar Ba'alach Gim L'Sham Sheyesh Mitzvah Ba'atzmo. Of course he has to learn himself. V'kan Katab B'tchilat Rav De Mitzvah Gufo Kodol Mitzvah B'no. I mean, of course he'd be obligated to learn himself, even if he's obligated to take care of his son's learning, of course he has to learn himself. So the next paragraph he says, V'hanir Bezeh Al Pi Ha'Yisod Ha'Mavor Ba'Richot B'Sefer Birkat Shmuel. There are two tracks in Talmud Torah. Chada, Hachta Menachot, Da'afilu lo kara ela kriyat shma shachar v'arbe. The Gemara in Menachot says, there's a story that somebody came to, does he tell the whole story here? No, he doesn't tell the whole story, so let's just see what he says. Afilu lo kara ela kriyat shma shachar v'arbe. Rav Yochanan says that that all you really have to do to be mekayem the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, keep it quiet, keep it on the down low, is say Shema in the morning and say Shema at night. That's what he says. Don't tell anybody, but that's all you have to do. Say Shema in the morning and Shema at night. Oh, Shana Perek Echad Shacharit, Perek Echad Arvit, Ki Mitzvah Lo Yamush Sefer Torah Zeh Mipicha. That's it. That's all you have to do. Va'od, Din V'Yigita Bo Yomam V'Layla, V'Din V'Shinantem, Dezeh Mitzvah Mutalat Alav, B'Chol Eitu B'Chol Shah. But then there's a separate obligation called V'Shinantem L'Venecha and V'Yigita Bo Yomam V'Layla, which means that you have to be learning at all times. It's at all times you have an obligation to learn. If you're not busy with a job, you're not busy with doing mitzvot, you should be busy in thinking and learning Torah. The Rambam himself said that you have to establish times during the day. Even though the son takes precedent when he's smarter, Hani mili b'mitzvot devishinantam. Vishinantam levenecha. Dahainu idiyata Torah over higita. Dumi advarim she'en lahem shi'ur. Right? That's in terms of the mitzvah of learning all the time. Right? So if you're taking care of your son learning all the time, then you don't have that anymore. Bazeh she'ech lomer de'hecha de'leka k'dei mechiyat shne'em bazeh adif ha'be'en me'ha'av k'ay gavna. Because that's where the son takes precedent. So in other words, if you're going to pay for an all-day school and it's between you and your son, then your son should do it. If he's smarter than you. But ava b'hachta kfiyot itim b'yom b'layla t'kol adam b'chuyam mishum lo yamush azeh lo shnai n'adifah. But that does not exempt you from making time, specific times in the morning and at night to learn Torah.
Is that different, by the way? Are we saying that actually the learning that we're kaveh itim, the learning that we're doing, is different to the learning which we might do, teaching our son, or learning which we're lilamed? Is it a different type of learning, or is it the same? Are we saying that it's all lilamed is the same? It's the same kind of
thing? Well, he's saying that there are two tracks. There's one track, which is in general, just being involved in learning, uh-huh. And with that, that's v'yigita bo yomam v'layla. And in terms of that track, if your son is greater than you in learning, then you can pass that off to him if it's an option.
We need to be committed to whether we have a chavrus or whether we're doing our own learning privately, then that's a separate track, and that isn't.
It means that you still have an obligation, even if you only had in that. And let's say you only had enough money to learn once in the morning and once at night, and you had to choose between you and your son. Then, even if your son was smarter than you, you would do it. You would take precedent in terms of that obligation. It means that core bare minimum obligation is absolute, and there's no competition between you and your son.
And what's his source for that?
These two tracks that are mentioned in the Gemara of Vishinantam and Vigita Boyom Balayla versus the Kriyat Shema Shel Shachrit V'Arvit. He sees them, the Gra saw them as two separate tracks. Beis Halevi is going to make it even clearer.
And just as the last thing you said is that if the son's learning full time, he still has an obligation to learn morning and night. And
the father.
Why would he think not?
So he's saying, well, the Rambam is telling him he doesn't have an obligation to make the effort to go and learn full time. That's his point. He might have thought they both have the obligation to learn, you know, to go and learn full time. No, the son takes care of that, and then you get dropped down to the bare minimum. That would be the idea. Okay, let's switch gears for a moment. So we can do a little bit of Halach Lamaisa, just a tiny bit of Halach Lamaisa, but also the fun topic of the women. Okay? It's just one line in the Shulchan Aruch. One line in the Shulchan Aruch, Arachai Mem Zayin. Simon Mem Zayin, Seif Yodalid. Nashim Mevarchot Birkat HaTorah. Okay, with regards to the mitzvah of the bracha of Birkat HaTorah in the morning, the Shulchan Aruch says, absolutely positively, they say the bracha of Birkat HaTorah. Now, why is this surprising? They don't have an obligation. No obligation of Birkat HaTorah, then why are they saying Birkat HaTorah? Oh, so Rabbi wants to say, just like women make a bracha on the Tilat Ulav, and Yeshivat Sukkah, etc., 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 all the mitzvot say Shasman Grama. So too, they make a bracha on this. What's the problem, Rabbi? Who says that? The Rama says that, following the tradition of Rabbeinu Tam and Ashkenazim. But Sfaradim, like the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, say that women do not make a bracha on mitzvot that they don't have an obligation to do. 100%. They do not make a bracha on lulav. They do not make a bracha on sukkah. And therefore you would expect that they would not make a bracha on the Torah. But they do.
So we were at an egalitarian bar mitzvah. We had this discussion.
About women making Birkat HaTorah or other things?
My arm got pulled up at my cousin's bar mitzvah.
Oh, should be clear. We're not talking about Birkat HaTorah at the Torah. Yeah, we're not talking about that. We're talking about from the Sidur. Talking about, they would.
I don't think that's Lorah Chaim.
Just to be clear, when he said
that. Lorah Chaim was saying
that. It's Shochner.
It was
the
Torah saying this.
No. It was so, intelligent.
I don't think they called one up to the Torah, but the Rav was sure.
You never know. I mean, in theory they could have, but I don't know. I don't think so.
Unlucky.
So, this is the big question. Okay? So this is a big question. And the truth is, I could jump to the Acharonim who all try to answer this question. There's like five different names. But if you really wanted to know the answer to this question, let's see how well you've been paying attention, where would you look? If you really wanted to know the answer to the question of why does the Shulchan Aruch say that it's pashut that women should make a bracha on Birkat HaTorah in the morning, where is the right place to look if you want to know the answer to that question? The answer to the question I phrased it. Why did the Shulchan Aruch say that you make Birkat HaTorah?
Because of the Rambam.
Because the Shulchan Aruch said it came from Yeshua.
But I said, if you want to know, and this is just a general, if you want to know why the Shulchan Aruch said something, then where should you look?
Shulchan
Aruch. He's not going to help you.
The Beit Yosef.
Thank you. The Beit Yosef. Why did you look at the Beit Yosef?
Because he wrote them before.
Because he wrote that. That's the precursor to the Shulchan Aruch, which is like the expanded version. The Shulchan Aruch is the digest version of the Beit Yosef. He said, okay, look, you have the Torah, and then you have the commentary of the Beit Yosef, which is one of the most voluminous commentaries in any book that we have in Judaism. And he said, okay, but I get it. You really just want to know what to do, right? So you want to know what to do. Here's my Shulchan Aruch. It's a set table. This is what you do. But ultimately, if you want to understand what's going on in there, then the right place to look is the Beit Yosef. And in the Beit Yosef, you find three different explanations for this, which are all actually separately mentioned by the Acharonim. I could have brought you the Magen Avraham and the Taz and I forget who else, and the Mishnah Berurah, and they would have each said one of these, but the Beit Yosef says all three. So first he says, Katavoda Agur, B'shem Marim Molin. So this is the Marim Molin. The Nashim of Archot Birkat Torah Afa B'sheinan Chayavot, V'lo Od, Ela Shamalamedet B'to Torah Ki'ilu Melamda Tiflut. Okay, so we weren't going to get into that, but the Gemara in Sota says that you're not supposed to teach your daughter Torah. Zeu B'Torah Shebal Peh. Ava B'Torah Shebichdav, V'Ava B'Shalashon Barchal Asok B'Dibrei Torah Mash M'Torah Shebal Peh, Basically, what did he say? What did the Agur say? that
that
it's only with regards to Torah Shebichtav that they, sorry, with Torah Shebaal Peh, that you're not supposed to teach them, and that they're not really obligated. But with regards to Torah Shebichtav, he almost implies, it sounds, like they are obligated in some fashion to learn Torah Shebichtav, and therefore they make a bracha. Even though the bracha itself has elements that make it sound like it's really a bracha on Torah Shebaal Peh, nevertheless, they should make this bracha.
So the fact that they're going to say, they're saying these brachot, when they're saying the brachot in the morning, that sometime in the day they're going to say some tefillah.
Right afterwards, right? Hopefully. Right after they say...
They
pretty much do. I mean, just like we do. After you say brachot Torah, you're supposed to say some psukim and some mishnayot.
So it's the psukim that follow off because they're from...
Yeah. Although, in that spirit, v'od, ki hen mevarchot al kriyat korbanot. Utfilah... כנגד הקורבנות תקנו, והן חייבות בתפילה, ואם כן, חייבות גם כן בקריאת העולה והקורבנות. Given that they're about to say psukim from korbanot, which they are obligated to say because it's part of tefillah, we learn a few things from this, that korbanot is considered part of tefillah that a person is obligated to do. So therefore, they're obligated to say birkat Torah. Right? They're obligated to say birkat Torah. Now, this is a funny answer, only because... it's anachronistic, right? Because we instituted the korbanot as part of the tefillah, you know, post facto, right? That was late. Because before, you know, at a certain point we were doing korbanot. So at what point did they become obligated in saying Birkat HaTorah? It sounds like, you know, maybe back in the day before this, they wouldn't have said Birkat HaTorah. It's only because we instituted saying korbanot.
Sfaradim say...
No, they didn't do korbanot, but they're obligated in tefillah, and then they have to say korbanot, because they have to say korbanot as part of tefillah.
Sfaradim say the korban of mincha, they read it before mincha.
Sfaradim do, yeah.
A little bit nuts.
Sfaradim do. It makes a lot of sense, though.
Or alternatively, well, if you're going to do the Torah, I guess you're not doing the korban, right? But if the tefillah came in place of the korban, then what's the point of doing the korban or whatever else.
Well, because when you do it, we believe that when you read the korbanot, it's as if you're bringing it. So it makes sense to get that.
But women are obligated in korbanot.
What?
Women are obligated in korbanot.
In korbanot tmidim, korbanot. Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about korbanot tmidim. Yeah. But then there's a third answer.
But they are in the world of korbanot, there are obligations.
Yeah, but. Yeah. Then there's the third answer. V'chol sheken the divrei smag, right? The sefer mitzvahs gedolos shekatov shanishim chayavot ulmor adinim hashachin lahem. This is a very important answer. This is what the Magen Avraham actually mentions, that since women are obligated in a sense because they must learn the halachot that apply to them, which the Rambam mentions in Reish Mem and Yordeh, that a woman is obligated to learn the halachot that apply to her. So therefore, she has the right to say Birkat Torah because she does have a chelek in Talmud Torah. Now, that just begs the question. So, in what way does she not have a chelik in the mitzvah of Talmud Torah? But she does. She has a chelik because she has to learn the halachos that apply to him. Now, here comes a bir hagra, and I can say, I don't want to say I can say with confidence, or no, I can't say with confidence, but this is, to me, I have never understood this hagra. I don't understand why he says what he says, and it's not that I don't understand the words that he's saying, because I totally do, and they're not hard. It's just that it's beyond me why he would write this down where he writes it down. Maybe you can help me. So the Bir HaGra, he says, look at the Magen Avraham, B'Shem HaAgur. Okay, the Magen Avraham says a few of these reasons. V'divreim d'chuyin. Mikam apanim. He says, this is not right, and for a few reasons. Ukrat savach ulimaritem, v'limaritem et b'neichem, v'lo b'noteichem. Look at the bottom line. Women have no obligation of learning Torah. It doesn't make any sense. They have no obligation. They have no chelek in the mitzvah itself of Talmud Torah. Heach tamar v'tzivanu v'natan lanu. The bracha says v'tzivanu and v'natan lanu, and you can't lie. Okay? Ela haikar al pi mashkat of tosvot v'shar perushim de nashim mevarchot al kol mitzvot asei shazman gama. Mashkatavti le'el semen yun zayin, that's achos tzitzis, I think. V'af tekaimel an kilu mam de tiflos davka b'tor shabal peh, etc., etc., etc. So what's the gra say? The Gra says, why do women make a bracha to Torah? Because they make a bracha on all mitzvahs that they're not obligated in. Now, why do I find this incomprehensible? Because he's explaining the Shulchan Aruch. You can't do that when you're explaining the Shulchan Aruch, because the Shulchan Aruch doesn't agree with this. The Shulchan Aruch says women do not make a bracha on mitzvah to say Shasman Grama. It's very nice for the Grah to say this if he was explaining the Rama, or just in a vacuum saying why our women say Brachat Torah, but it doesn't work as an explanation of the Shulchan Aruch. And the reason I know it doesn't work, aside from what I just said, is because the Shulchan Aruch says the things that the Magen Avraham says. So, I mean, the only explanation I can come up with is that the Gra is in some way not trying to explain the Shulchan Aruch. He's just trying to explain why women say Birkat HaTorah. But I don't understand why he says it over here, because why do Sephardi women say Birkat HaTorah? That's the question that we should be answering. I don't have to answer the question of why Ashkenazi women say Birkat HaTorah. There's no question. But why do Sephardi women, that's what the Shulchan Aruch is trying to do. So I never have understood this this Gra. It's not only my question. I saw the Avi Ezri of Shach asked this question. I don't know what the answer was.
It's funny, you said because it says in the Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah.
The question is why.
The question is why. I don't understand what the Gra is doing over here. I don't understand it. Okay. Yeah. Just two more points. Continue with the Brisker stuff, okay? We're going through the whole family tonight, the whole Soloveitchik family. We saw the Rav, we saw the Rav Chaim, now we're seeing the Griz. The Griz is Rav Yitzchak Ze'ev Halevi Soloveitchik. That's the Rav's uncle. So Rav Chaim had two sons. I don't know if he had more than two. I just know two. Rav Moshe and Rav Yitzchak Ze'ev. Rav Moshe is the father of the Rav, and Rav Yitzchak Ze'ev is the Brisker Rav, who ended up in Yerushalayim after Brisk. So he just points out, we don't have to read the whole thing inside, but basically he gives a totally different answer for why women say Birkat HaTorah. He simply says Birkat HaTorah is not what you think it is. What do we think it is? We think it's a Birkat
Mitzvah.
We think it's a bracha that you say before you do a mitzvah, just like Netilat Lulav and Shivat Sukkah and Tefillin, right? Yeah. He says no, it's not. It's a bracha on Torah. It's a bracha on Torah. It's more like Birkat HaNe'anin than anything else. You want to learn Torah, you have to make a bracha first. So, women are going to learn Torah. They have to daven. They want to read Tehillim. They want to learn Torah. They want to learn the halachos that they are obligated in. They're making the bracha, but not as in, you know, we're obligated, but as in, I want to learn Torah. I have to make a bracha. Torah ba'i bracha. Now, the reason I connect to this is because, as I said many times, we only have two brachot that are possibly midaraita. One of them is Birkat HaMazon, and the other is Birkat HaTorah. Somewhat of a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, whether or not that's actually a mitzvah. The Ramban for sure says it is. The Rambam may not, or he may agree. He just says it's part of the mitzvah of the Talmud Torah, but Birkat HaTorah is daraita. It's mentioned in a pasuk at the end of... It's actually, functionally, according to the Ramban, the last mitzvah in the Torah. After Kitzvah Lechem V'Tashir Azot. So in Azinu it says, Avod Hashem, sorry, Avogod Elokeinu, how does it start? Avogod Elokeinu, how does the beginning of the pasuk start? Kishem Hashem Ekra, Avogod Elokeinu, right? So that pasuk actually is the source for like four different mitzvahs. It's amazing, in the Gemara Brachos, but it's according to the Gemara, it's the source for the mitzvah of Birkat HaTorah. So, and that's interesting, right? What I just said, the mitzvah of Birkat HaTorah. The mitzvah of Birkat HaTorah. So it's not even just a bracha; it's a mitzvah itself. So that actually kind of got me thinking that, well, maybe women are simply obligated in the mitzvah of Birkat HaTorah. That got me thinking that. And I haven't formulated that completely, because you would expect that the people would be obligated the mitzvah of Birkat HaTorah have to be obligated in the mitzvah of Limud Torah. What? That's what I was thinking. I was thinking maybe the Shulchan Aruch simply thinks that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Birkat HaTorah. I'm pausing because you would expect that the mitzvah of Birkat HaTorah would apply to people who have a chiyuv to learn Torah. But if the Griz is right, then no, women are obligated in the mitzvah of being mevarech the Torah, of saying the Torah is great.
Makes a lot of sense. You're obligated to bench, you're not obligated to eat.
Well, you can't.
That's
true. Bench,
yeah, you can't bench without eating.
You definitely can't bench without eating, but you're not obligated to eat.
Yeah.
So the mitzvah is the benching.
But
right?
This is
mitzvah, not the eating.
This is you're obligated even if you don't know.
Yeah,
benching.
You would think.
No,
you would think.
But so what I'm saying is the mitzvah is not the eating, the mitzvah is the benching. So somebody had the mitzvah for the woman, is not learning the Torah. The mitzvah is saying is the bracha on learning.
But can you say this bracha without learning? Because you can't say the benching bracha without benching.
Maybe
without
not.
Eating.
Maybe not.
So
maybe not.
According to this view,
according to most views, you can't say you're supposed correct. To learn yes. right after saying
uh-huh.
Berkat.
But according to this view, maybe not, because maybe it's a separate mitzvah.
But women are allowed to.
According to what I said, Kasi.
What would you say?
But if learning
once
is
a day,
learning is
will it be a mitzvah?
Unlike
no,
this
mitzvah once a day is not necessarily.
During
the time of the day. Only if it was attached
learning
to the time in the day.
Like eating is
once a day is not a zman drama. Once during the daytime would be zman drama.
If your mitzvah is saying the shema,
maybe not.
You're learning. It's saying the shema. Then you're going to say the shema.
That's the question.
Maybe not.
That's the question.
Women are not obligated to say the shema.
Maybe
you're obligated to double.
Maybe that's why I said you're obligated to learn straight off. So you're saying
separate Torah. Maybe it's not a separate mitzvah. You're just saying it on the learning.
But anyways, that was my point. I wanted to say maybe they're obligated in the mitzvah itself of Birkat Torah, and that's why they have to say it. But again, you can't say that that's a Shulchan Aruch's reason, because
because
he told you what his reason was, so I wouldn't have the chutzpah to tell him what his reason is.
You would have thought the Gra would have picked that up. So.
No, but he doesn't. I don't know that. I don't know. But, okay. Last thing I wanted to do tonight, we're not going to be able to read it all inside, but I do want you to see this, because actually I learned something last night that I didn't know. So the Beis HaLevi, this part I did know. This is a famous piece. He says it in his Hakdama to the tshuvas of the Beis HaLevi. Beis HaLevi is Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Salvechik, right? That's the Rav's great-grandfather, same name. So in his Agdama to his tshuvas, he has this piece, and also in Parshat Mishpatim, in his Ala Parsha. Same thing. Basically, the principle that he's getting across, I won't read the whole thing inside, but the principle he's getting across is he asks the question. He says, what's the deal with Naaseh V'Nishma? Right? How could B'nai Yisrael say Naaseh V'Nishma? It doesn't make any sense. How can you do before you know what to do? Okay? So he says, actually, you know, it's all a trick. Really, they're both about learning. Both Naaseh and Nishma are both about learning. He says, what's going on? He says, there are two kinds of Talmud Torah. There's a kind of Talmud Torah which is Lilmod Almanat La'asot, where you're just learning in order to know what to do. And then there's a separate mitzvah that people don't know about, and that's Lilmod Almanat Lilmod. Learning for the sake of learning. Learning because it's a mitzvah to learn Torah. As many times as possible, even if you've learned it before, still a mitzvah to learn over and over and over and over. Just because, just like, you know, every morning you have to wake up and put on tefillin. I put on tefillin yesterday. It doesn't matter. You have to do it again and again and again and again. He says, so what's going on? If it would have said nishma v'naseh, then what would you have said? That what does nishma mean?
To learn.
We'll learn. And then what does naseh mean?
To do.
But by reversing it, what is it doing? It's saying, no, there's a mitzvah of also learning to do. And then there's a separate mitzvah of learning just to learn. Otherwise, if it had gone in the right order of nishma v'naseh, then I would have said the nishma is only for the sake of the naseh. Mm-hmm. By reversing it, it teaches us that no, there's a separate mitzvah of nishma, which, you know, goes after the naseh. Mm-hmm. You learn even after you do. That's his principle over here. And he uses this in his akdama to explain the difference between men and women with regards to the Talmud Torah. He says, men... What do we mean when we say that women are not obligated in Talmud Torah? What we mean is they're not obligated in Nishma. That's what we mean. They're not obligated in Nishma. But they're absolutely obligated in Naseh, because, as the Rama says, they have to learn to know what to do. So he says, with regards to the bracha, this is what he writes in his Akdama, with regards to the bracha, they should make the bracha because they have an obligation. They have a part in the obligation. They have a part in the obligation of Naseh. But they're not obligated in everything else because they're not part of the Nishma. That's what he says in Akdama. Problem is, in Siman Vav, he reverses it. And he says, no, ma pitom, they absolutely are not obligated in Talmud Torah at all. And the fact that they have to learn, that's not the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. That's just a Hechsher mitzvah. That's just building a sukkah in order to be able to sit in the sukkah. They have to keep hilchos nida, they have to keep hilchos kashrus, they have to keep hilchos tzedakah and tefillah, etc., etc. So they have to learn, but that's not a mitzvah. That's just them doing those things in order to be able to keep the mitzvah. Because it's a mitzvah that they're not obligated in, and women make brachas and mitzvahs that they're not obligated in. That's what the gross says. No, women make brachas. No, because once they're learning Torah, so that they're also performing the mitzvah. They're not obligated in it, right? The point is, what everybody was trying to do in order to explain why they make the brachas, they were trying to make women obligated in some way. Because that's what you need for the Shulchan Aruch to say that the woman has to say a bracha. And for the Rambam to say that a woman has to say a bracha, which, by the way, the Rambam never does say that a woman has to make a bracha. He never says it. So, but to get the Shulchan Aruch to say that a woman has to say a bracha, you have to create a chiyuv.
Right.
So the Beis HaLevi says, no, there's no chiyuv. He rejects it. He's like the Gra. He says, no, it's ridiculous. There's no chiyuv. The only reason that she says it is because she's allowed to make a bracha even on something she's not obligated in, which is, of course, only according to the opinion of the Tosfos and the Rambam. Mm. But it's amazing. He reverses course in this siman over here, which this is the first time I saw it. Where, you know, in Hakdama he writes one thing, and then in here he writes something else. The context is he's trying to explain why women aren't able to write a Sefer Torah. And he's saying, and he says, if the original Sfarah was correct and that women have a Chelik in Talmud Torah, then they should be able to write a Sefer Torah. But you see that they can't. So they must not have a chelik. So they also don't have a chelik in the bracha. So they come in to make the bracha because they can make a bracha. They can make any bracha they want. Okay, we learned a lot tonight. I don't think I can recap everything that we did. We talked about at what point, whether a father has to teach a son, whether we can outsource it. What does it mean to learn? Does it mean teaching yourself? Does it mean learning? How many different kinds of learning are there? There's a learning that you do once a day, twice a day as a kavua, and there's the learning that you're doing all the time, kind of like holistic, all the time learning. And then we saw that there's also another two tracks in the Beis HaLevi of learning for the sake of understanding what to do, and then learning for the sake of learning. And that's a separate obligation on men only of learning even things that are not lamaisa, learning it over and over. And the first one may apply to women, and maybe its own kind of mitzvah, or it may just be kind of a heksher mitzvah. Let's see a whole track over there. Bottom line is, women do make brachas Torah, according to all days. Sure. Shkach.